Camping can be a fun time for most, but as we've learned on this channel, camping can also be a fight for your life. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. It's good to see you made it back for another episode. Today, I'm going to be sharing some allegedly true and creepy camping horror stories. If you have a camping story or something else that you'd like to share in a future video, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that truly help keep this show going. Now, without further ado, let's get into these creepy and allegedly true camping horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. Before we jump into today's video, I just wanted to welcome a new sponsor to the show. Welcome, IPVanish. So, what is IPVanish, you ask? IPVanish is a virtual private network, a VPN for short. A VPN is a super important tool that helps you safely browse the internet. You can use a VPN on your computers, tablets, phones, and even things like your Fire Stick when you're streaming media. When you use a VPN, all your data is encrypted. What you're reading, what you're searching, what you're watching, whatever it is you're doing. IPVanish is just $3.49 a month. For just $3.49 a month, or $27.99 a year, you can help protect your online privacy and security. You get an anonymous IP address. This means your IP address can't be tracked by anyone on the web. You can circumvent any online censorship. IPVanish has more than 1,500 servers in 70 plus locations. You can get protection when using public Wi-Fi. Remember, with IPVanish, all your data is encrypted, so no one can snoop on what you're doing, no matter where you're at. Go to IPVanish.com/swamped and claim your 65% savings. They have plans starting at just $3.49 a month and $27.99 a year. This is the time to sign up. With our discount and their current promotional offerings, you can get a VPN for 65% off their usual offering. IPVanish is the best of the best. Even rated 4.7 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot. And that's with more than 6,000 reviews. Show these guys some love. Remember, it's IPVanish.com/swamped to get the deal and to start protecting yourself online. Now, this is not my experience, but my friend's father. He told us around this camp trip his son invited us on. He told us the story of him and his siblings living in the rural forest area of an undeveloped New York state. He told us around where he lived there was a dark forest grown of pine needles. Forest for miles, undiscovered, planted by millions of Americans who lost their jobs during the Great Depression. He and his siblings lived in surrounding areas, and every evening, after his mother had left for work, they ventured into the surrounding peaceful areas of the woods. And they would often venture around the open woods that allowed more natural sunlight to shine in. However, during these expeditions around a specific pine tree within the woods, the children would often get very sleepy, almost like a sound of a natural lullaby that would put them to sleep for who knows how long within the woods. He told us that he and his siblings would go out there and explore. His older sibling would watch them during their expeditions. They would also fall asleep with them every single time. But here's where the story gets weird. This was like a nest of some sort, made of pine needles and other soft materials from the forest. He told us that they would not go any further than those pine trees, because every time, they would fall asleep. He said something felt like it did not enjoy intruders coming into its territory, and so they stayed along the wooden tree land, but explored every acre they had except for that area. He informed us how these lullaby instances would feel as if they were floating in a boat being jostled around and being carried in someone or something's arms. Remember, he is one of 4 siblings. The oldest was 16 at the time. It would not be able to carry all of them. It would be insane. He recalled that one morning had come. They were in their clothing sleeping against a huge tree on their property and saw their mom pulling up in the morning. She was coming home from work. He and his siblings awoke to see that they were very confused and had no idea how they got out there, when they were often deep in the woods, miles from home, they would recall being awoken randomly and never knowing that they fell asleep. He recalled once being awoken by himself, feeling a presence, that there was some sort of monster that was 6 to 9 feet tall, with womanly proportions of the chest. He said it felt like this thing had a nurturing presence. It was able to carry them all by itself, often bringing them back to their house, gently putting them down, and letting them sleep before wandering back into the woods. He believes that this was a mother Sasquatch that lived in the nearby forest of New York. There are many mountainous and forest regions in that area. He thinks maybe she could have lost her young and saw them in the forest and decided to care for them and keep them safe from harm. I know the story was a bit confusing, but thank you for sharing it. The argument started the same way every time. You'll never catch me dead in a national park. They're full of nothing but fat tourists and RVs. I'm from the old school, and I like it that way. The old school was a kind description of how he camped. If it was made up from anything other than canvas or leather, he considered it newfangled junk. My mother tried on multiple occasions to introduce new things, such as a nylon tent, but he was just not having it. He would rather carry that big, musty wall tent everywhere he camped. And do not get me started about the stinking cans of kerosene that always leaked all over everything. He was certainly a man born too late. The term roughing it had been coined with him in mind. He would continue to suffer through his archaic ways of experiencing the outdoors until the near death of my younger brother showed him the error of his ways. Throughout the early 80s, my dad would drag us out into the national forest during Thanksgiving. The weather was relatively mild for the time of year, and the forest was absolutely beautiful. I could still smell the pine trees. These retreats always seemed to coincide with the hunting season for some reason. I remember hearing Dad used to hunt before meeting our mom. I think she forbade him from doing it anymore, so this was his way of sticking it to her. Either way, gunshots near the camp were a common sound. I guess because our parents grew up with extraordinarily little oversight, me and my brother Mike had the same childhood. No one considered that it may be dangerous with a bunch of trigger-happy guys around to let two young boys play in the woods alone. It was normal for the two of us to leave camp at dawn, play all morning until lunchtime, and then go back out until supper. We had been doing this for as long as I can remember, and no one ever batted an eye. On one specific Thanksgiving, we had been running and crawling through the underbrush all day. This was during the time G.I. Joe and Rambo were at the height of their popularity. Mike and I loved dressing up in our camouflage clothes and playing war. Mike's birthday had been just a few days before, and he got a pair of G.I. Joe walkie-talkies. Looking back, they were absolute junk, but we loved them for what they were. After lunch, we returned to the woods. I cannot remember exactly what I was doing at that moment, but I know Mike was trying to sneak up on me. I was sitting on a fallen tree and suddenly heard a loud bang, quickly followed by a whistling going by my head. I dropped flat on my stomach and waited for another shot. I was not sure what was happening, but something told me to stay where I was. No more than 30 seconds had passed when I heard a faint moaning in the distance. Since Mike was missing at that second, I called him on the walkie-talkie. No answer came, but I heard a new noise. This sounded like my name, so I called Mike again. No answer. Now, honestly, I was getting scared. Without any other ideas, I yelled out his name. I told him the game was over and he needed to answer me. I was not sure if he was trying to trick me or was in real trouble. I listened very intently, but nothing but the faint rustle of leaves could be heard. I walked in the direction of the rustle and listened again. Nothing. So I called out again, and the rustling repeated, followed by another moan. I ran in that direction about 20 yards and stopped. The rustling came again, just to my right and awfully close. I could not see anything at first, so I dropped to my stomach and scanned the ground. About 3 feet away, I see the bottom of a Nike shoe. I knew it had to be Mike. I ran to the bush and he was laying under. The sight I came upon still breaks my heart to this day. There was Mike, staring at me with a terrified look on his face. Just under his arm was a hole, with blood pouring out of it. It shocked me, but I did the best I could to play it cool. I did not want to make him any more scared than he already was. Had I been older, I may have known how not to move him or move him better or what, but I just reached down and scooped him up in my arms. He was too heavy for me, but I was doing my best to save him. I made it about 100 yards and I had to set him down. He must have been in considerable pain. He asked me to leave him there and to go get help. His voice sounded very weak, and I almost broke into tears right there. Somehow, I held myself together. I ran for about a mile or so without stopping. My mom must have known something was wrong. She yelled out in a panicked voice for my father. My dad came out of the tent, took one look at me and said, "How bad is it?" I was too winded to speak. I just pointed to where I sat him down and he took off. By the time I caught up with him, my dad was already picking him up and heading for camp. The entire ride to the hospital, my mom kept talking to him, telling him to hold on. I rode in the back seat, holding my shirt against the wound the whole way there. What would have normally been at least a 30-minute drive took us 20. My dad handed him off to the doctors. They had him in surgery within the hour, and the next three were a long, living nightmare. More shocked than anything, I was just in amazement at how calmly my parents were handling everything. Having become a parent since I realized, they were far from calm. But they handled it well, either way. It was after midnight sometime when the doctors gave us the news. Things had been touch and go for a long time. I only found out much later that Mike had died more than once during surgery, but Mike had a good chance of recovering completely. The police, having been notified of the shooting, arrived soon after to question us. Now that the urgency of the situation had passed, I broke down several times during my recollection. That was the first time I came to grips with the possibility that I could have been shot myself. Mike was going to be in the hospital for a few weeks, so my parents got a hotel room nearby. I think my dad considered staying at the camp, but after a very short discussion with my mom, he decided against it. The detectives handling the case kept us up to date, but as late as the day Mike was discharged, no names had been connected to the case. The most widely held theory is that a poacher mistook the movement in the bushes for a deer and fired. It accounts for the lack of red flags during the search through hunting licenses. It was not the first time this happened, and sadly, will not be the last. Mike was one of the fortunate ones. 34 years have passed since then, and nobody has been decisively connected to the shooting. Mike did make a full recovery, and went on to start his own business and family, just like any other normal person. Something great did come out of this mess. We never returned to the National Forest, and even better, my dad decided with all those fat tourists and their RVs being around, it was safer just for him to stay at home. Being 12 and 17, I got to spend my holidays in awesome places like Yosemite and the Grand Canyon. This was the way I always thought camping should be, peaceful and quiet, and I am almost positive Mike would agree with me. Way back when I was in my mid-20s, in the late 1980s, I used to be a hardcore camper and hiker. But given that my home state of Rhode Island is like the size of a postage stamp, relatively speaking anyway, I exhausted a lot of the more local campgrounds quickly and began to look for something a little wilder. I'd heard a lot of great things about the Appalachian Trail, how hiking was a badge of honor for a lot of people who shared my passion for the outdoors. My uncle, on my dad's side, had hiked the whole thing over the course of a summer back in the 50s. He had never shut up about it. Whenever he would see me, he would just talk about it and bring it up, and the subject of hiking came up all the time. He made it sound magical, like there was true wilderness out there, just waiting to be explored. And so, I made up my mind to mimic the journey my uncle took over one summer. I could not get the time off work to walk the whole trail, but if I timed it right, I could walk the southern portion of the trail from Harper's Ferry to Asheville, North Carolina, in just a couple of weeks, fulfilling a hiking dream I had for what seemed like an age. Then, in the summer of 1989, I traveled down to Harper's Ferry by bus and by train with all my hiking and camping gear on my back. After picking up a few final supplies for my journey south, I hiked up onto the Appalachian Trail and kicked off the journey of a lifetime. The first few days were tough, but I got used to the level of strain quickly, and I'm telling you, I've never been as hungry or tired as I was on those first few nights up in the Appalachia. I brought a hammock with me, as I heard some intense stories about the bugs down in West Virginia. Nasty little beasties with names like the assassin bug, which basically has a big spike for a mouth, or cow killer ants, whose stings are so painful that they are said to have killed an actual cow once or twice. That had to be pure rumor, but it was intimidating nonetheless. So, every night, after the day's hike, I would take it out of my pack, unroll it, and tie it up between two trees before getting some shut-eye. It did not make for the comfiest night's sleep I ever had, but I was not complaining, especially if it kept the black widows off me. But since I was out in the woods, most nights without cover, every little hoot or squawk from nocturnal animals would wake me up. It was irritating, sure, but it was part and parcel of being out and bonding with nature. So, this one night, I wake up sure I had heard something rustling in the leaves close by. I shift in my hammock, peering over my shoulder, and then feel blood run cold as I see a big, dark shape looming. I froze for a moment, feeling my eyes adjust to the darkness, and I could tell that there was a large person looming right over me, just standing there, statue still staring. In one fluid motion, I rolled out of my hammock and hit the ground running, bolting off into the trees. I did not give a damn who the hell was standing over me. Whoever does that kind of thing did not have the best intentions in the first place, and I was not about to stick around to make small talk either. I ran a safe distance off into the woods, caught my breath, and circled around, and then started sneaking back towards my camp. My intention was to make sure it was clear before gathering up my stuff and moving to a safer spot. I took it slowly, scanning the darkness for any sign of the shadowy figure, eventually finding my way back to my camp to discover it was completely deserted, with all of my gear apparently untouched. I had this horrible feeling in my gut that whoever had been standing there had just backed off to watch from a distance and would wait for me to come back to get my stuff before ambushing me. If they were not there to steal from me, it was obviously that they wanted something else entirely. I dreaded to think exactly what that was. But regardless, I managed to grab my stuff and get the hell out of the area without anyone managing to sneak up on me. The next few days I walked hard and fast, exhausting myself in any attempts to get as far away from that area as possible. After that, I figured I was safe. No one had bothered me during the previous few days hiking, so I figured I would be okay from there on out. But I was wrong. Hideously wrong. Every single night since that incident had me struggling to get sleep. I kept picturing that person standing over me, just staring down at me in the darkness. I had no idea how long they had been there, or what they had wanted, or what they had in mind for me, and I was only glad as hell that I had gotten out of the area. But still, I did not start to be able to feel safe again until I had bought some fishing line from sporting goods store. I found it in a small town I passed through on my way down the trail. I could then use this to make tripwires that ran between the trees close to where I was camping. There would be a couple of empty cans of beans strewn together, and whoever snagged their foot and wire would make them clink together, alerting me to their presence. I had one big scare when a fox snagged the line and I rolled out of my hammock with a knife, ready to take on whoever was there, only to see the furry little guy scurrying away in the midnight. I did end up laughing to myself about that one, and after that, I stopped sleeping with a knife in my hand, because all it would do was take one slip and I would have, you know, obviously messed myself up, and I would be in a world of trouble. About a week went by and I had just about gotten over the whole shadowy figure in the night incident. I had to be about 100 miles away from where it had taken place by now, and I had no trouble on any of the other nights, save the incident with the fantastic Mr. Fox that about scared the hell out of me. So, with the help of my little tripwire alert device, I had just started being able to get to sleep without any trouble again. But that night I woke up suddenly to find that I could not move properly. I could not bring my arms up at my sides at all, and the material from my hammock seemed to be pushed up right into my face. I was cocooned by it, like the fabric was wrapped around my entire body. This had only just registered in my half-awake brain when I heard fabric snapping. Then boom, I hit the dirt very hard, completely knocking the wind out of me. I had no idea what the heck was going on, struggling to break out of the hammock, only I could not. This is when I felt the hammock being dragged across the forest floor. Then it hit me. Whoever this was dragging me across the ground and had bundled me up in my own hammock with cord. They then cut me off the ropes and then are dragging me off to God knows where. I screamed at the top of my lungs for whoever it was to let me the hell out of there, but no one responded. All I could hear was the sound of the hammock's fabric rustling against the forest floor. I knew I had to think fast, or whatever was going on would not end well at all. As I said, I had stopped sleeping with my knife in my hand, or nearby me in the hammock, because that was just an accident waiting to happen. So I had obviously nothing handy to cut through the material or to make any escape. Or so I thought. In a flash, I had an idea. A few years back, my dad had gifted his old wristwatch to me. It was a reliable old thing, but I had just one complaint about it. The little latch thing that kept it tied to my wrist was torn with age, and was a little sharp from the years of use. I had managed to accidentally poke myself a few times with it in the process of picking it up or putting it on, and one time it did draw blood. I knew what I had to do. I unbuckled the watch as quickly as I could, which was not easy considering I was getting dragged along the ground in pitch darkness. And managing to pinch the sharp clasp between my thumb and index finger was even harder, but still I managed it. And when I did, I began to rake it against the fabric of the hammock. It was just as effective as cutting canvas as it was cutting skin, and although it took a good few tries, it did not take long until I was able to see a subtle glow of the silvery moonlight from the other side. I kept cutting, as quickly and quietly as I could manage. Until there were so many cuts that I could rip myself out of that canvas cocoon like some terrified newborn bursting out of a womb. You'll have to excuse the analogy, but in retrospect, that is exactly what it seemed like. I was born again that night. I got a second chance at living. Escaping that hammock meant life, because I know that staying in there would have meant death. For the second time in about 10 days, I found myself bounding through the dark woods. Only that second time, the terror in me dwarfed what I had felt the first time around. I don't even know how I managed to escape. Assuming it was the same figure standing over me from that first night, they had somehow managed to track me for more than 100 miles and sneak past my tripwires. They were a far better woodsman than me, probably physically fitter too. I just know that by the time I reached a house with its lights on, and I turned to look behind me as I was banging on the door, there was no one else around. The family who lived there were kind enough to put me up for the night after I called the local sheriff, who came out in the morning to help me retrace my steps through the woods. We found my camp but not the hammock, and although I told him everything in excruciating detail, I could tell he was extremely skeptical of my story. He even suggested I had just gotten lost and frightened in the dark, and ended up jumping at shadows, maybe even had a bad dream that seemed a little too vivid because of the lack of proper rest, but I know it was real. Just from the way my palms are sweating writing this, I am certain that night really did happen the way I remember it. I never did finish that dream hike. The next day I caught a bus back towards Harper's Ferry, then took the train all the way back to Providence, and I have only ever told a handful of people what happened out on the trails. I figured not many would really believe me. They would just think I was telling a campfire tale or something. I did not tell my hiking uncle for the longest time. I thought he would just gloat or whatever. Tell me I did not have it in me to do something that tough. But when I finally did tell him my story, I got a reaction that I was not expecting. He just nodded and told me that there were some nights that he did not think he would make it out alive either. That there are people who live up in those mountains, who have been outlaws for generations, who live outside of society, outside of the natural order of things. He had some close calls himself at times, bumping into people who are clearly not nearly as friendly as the majority of West Virginians, and sometimes seeing things he knew darn well he was not supposed to see. But just what those things were, he did not seem to want to say. I always told myself to try my little Appalachian adventure another time. But maybe when I'm older, maybe wiser, and when I have gotten something a little bit bigger to defend myself with, the trail will still be there, waiting for me. But then again, so might be whoever tried to drag me off that night. This is the story of my first, and subsequently my last, camping experience. I was 16 at the time, and my family, my mother, sister, and brother, had made plans to go camping with our aunt, uncle, and two cousins over the weekend. This was my family's first real camping trip, while my cousin's aunt and uncle had gone camping dozens of times. Our first afternoon and evening of camping went quite well. I surprisingly had a lot of fun. It was later that night, maybe around 10:30 or so. My cousins, my sister, and myself were settling into our tent. We were lying in our makeshift bed when we heard footsteps circling around our tent. Slightly alarmed by this, we sat up and noticed that whoever was outside circling our tent was holding what we assumed to be a stick and tracing the tent as they circled it. At one point, my sister sticks her hand out and feels a leg through the tent's fabric. We knew it was not our mom, as she has a trach, and her breathing is very deep and distinct. It was not our brother, because he was only 5 at the time, and we heard grown adult footsteps. They were much too heavy to be a child's. Our cousins informed us that it was probably their dad who always likes to play pranks, especially at night. We decided to look out the small window, if you would like to call it that. It gave us a view that looked towards the road located by our campsite. On the road was my uncle and aunt walking back from the restrooms. My cousins, sister, and I started to connect the dots. Whoever was outside, circling our tents, was not a member of our family. It was a stranger. And all that separated us from that individual was a thin layer of fabric. As our uncle and aunt approached our campsite, we called them over to our tent and told them what happened. Everything stopped after a while. We talked with our aunt and uncle for a bit. We assumed that the individual ran away when our aunt and uncle approached the campsite. My cousins, sister, and I were still understandably freaked out about what had happened. But we were so tired that we were able to fall asleep eventually. The rest of the trip went seemingly well, and I enjoyed the rest of it as much as I possibly could. The worst part of it all was that nobody believed us. In fact, our aunt, uncle, and mother made fun of us and told us that we were just being paranoid, as my cousin, sister, and I love everything creepy from conspiracy theories to urban legends. It still bothers me all the time, because I never found out who that individual was or what their intentions were. I also think about what could have happened if our aunt and uncle did not come when they did. It is not like we would be able to defend ourselves, as we were just 4 teenage girls at the time. Ever since then, I have been turned off from camping, and I do not see myself going again in the future. Hey, Swamp Dweller. I have been listening to your channel for a few months now, and I decided to send you one of my stories. I have a few questions about it, and would like to know your opinion. Before we begin, I want to give you some context. I come from a small town in northern Wisconsin. I am not going to say the town, because I would prefer not to be doxxed, but the whole town is split in half near the descendants of German and Irish settlers that came here in the 1850s and 60s. The whole town is immensely proud of our roots, especially my family. My dad's side of the family is German, and a lot of our family traditions come from our German side. However, my mom's side is Irish. When I was young, my grandfather, who lived in the town his entire life, would babysit us frequently. When he would babysit us after school, he would tell us stories from traditional Irish folklore. While my mother's family had lived in the area for nearly 200 years, my grandpa still held on deep to a thick Western Irish accent. Because of my grandfather's knowledge of all the old stories, my siblings and I had an intricate knowledge of Irish spirits and fairies. As the years went by, I joined the Boy Scouts and rapidly jumped through the ranks and eventually attended summer camps. I still, to this day, love camping. I fell in love with the summer camp, so much that the following year I returned as a camp staff member. The camp is old. It was founded in the 1940s, right after the Second World War had ended. Many of the buildings could be traced to those initial years, or were built in the same style and materials, giving the camp a rustic appearance. During the day, it was one of the homiest and welcoming places I have ever been to. At night, when the only light source is the dim light of the moon, it can be a different story. This environment spawned essentially a million different ghost stories, all of which I dismissed at first. I have had a handful of minor and slightly terrifying encounters, some of which I could tell you if you are interested. While admittedly, the camp was a little more than a bit creepy at night, I would often go on short walks to help myself relax. This is where I found myself in late June of 2018. My grandfather had been diagnosed with cancer shortly before I had left for camp. He had seemed in fine health before I left, and the doctors assured us that he would probably make a full recovery. Although, I had recently been having problems getting to sleep, which consequently led me to taking longer and longer walks as the summer had gone on. That night, there was a bright full moon, illuminating the entire camp. Combined with growing up in the woods my entire life, I was quite comfortable with walking around the forest at night. As for the animals, aside from the occasional mountain lion and local coyotes, bears, and wolves, they would rather leave you alone. What I'm trying to get at is that I had nothing to create any sense of worry for me at the time. The sense of security I had created in my mind allowed me to drift around the camp and lose myself in thought without a second glance. I decided to walk back to my cabin after checking my phone for the time. My phone said it was 11:17. Quickly, I mentally kicked myself, mostly because I need to shower, brush my teeth, and all the other bedtime rituals we perform. I shared my cabin with 14 other staff members, all guys I had worked with and got to know very well over the last 3 years. The entrance to the cabin was a little communal area, simply called the lounge, where we would all hang out until we had gone to bed. The only thing you will need to know is that my cabin is located directly over the boathouse. As I walked down the path to the cabin, I must have blacked out or something, because I strangely found myself on top of a waterfront hill. I do not actually remember going to the lakefront, nor remember walking there. I was understandably confused, but being at the waterfront hill is a stone throw away from my cabin. I did not really think about it much. I chose to start walking back to the cabin, grumbling about wasting time. However, I noticed something in the lake. I walked down 3 steps towards the water before I realized what it was. I saw what appeared to be a person hunched over in the water. Every now and again, some scout would get this brilliant idea to swim in the lake at night. That, or 2 staff members in the throes of a summer camp romance would decide to go skinny dipping. So I called out, "Hey there, can't be swimming right now." The individual in question did not respond to me, so I decided to walk down closer to the lake and call out to the person again. As I got closer, more and more features started to become apparent. I assumed it was a woman because the individual had long dark hair, and she was wearing what I could only assume would be a green ankle-length dress. I was about 3/4 of the way down the hill before I had stopped. I stared at her for a bit. I could tell that she was doing something in the water. Although, if you had to ask me what she was doing, I would not be able to tell you for the life of me. I decided to walk into the waterfront area itself. "Ma'am." I tried yelling at her to get her attention as I approached. At this point, I was maybe 20 feet away from her. As I approached the dock, I yelled at her again, "Ma'am." This time, I had managed to catch her attention as she stopped what she was doing. "You can't be down here right now," I started to say as she slowly started to stand up. At this point, a shiver went up my spine. Although I would not be able to tell you why, my brain started hitting every alarm bell and giving me the instinct to flee. But I kept my feet planted in the sand below. When she fully stood up, it dawned on me why I was so uneasy. She was not making a single sound. When you move in water, you are bound to at least make a bit of sound, especially considering the amount of water that I could see was dripping off of her. When I was hit with this realization, I noticed that she had started to turn around. I could feel my brain begin to go into slow-mo before she had turned around. When she had fully turned around, I got a perfect look at her. She was pale. She practically glowed in the moonlight. I could tell she was soaked, not just like she was splashing in the water. Instead, it looked like she had just climbed out of the shower. Although the thing that strikes me even to this day and keeps me awake at night were her eyes. While her entire body was perfectly proportional, her eyes were much larger than any. I think her eyes would be the size of my fist, and they were jet black. Finally, my instincts took over, but instead of running off, I just fell back onto the solid boardwalk that the ranger had built the month before. She slowly approached me, until she was about 4 or 5 feet away from me. That is when she opened her mouth beyond what was humanly possible and she let out a scream. As soon as I heard that scream, I had become frozen in place and reached to clench my ears. I am not going to kid you with this. I could barely move. I just writhed around in pain on the ground until I could finally cover my ears. While now it sounded like a scream, it was now echoing in my head, but now at least I could move. I very slowly forced myself up with my elbows, not daring to uncover my ears. After getting to my feet, I slowly fought my way back up the boardwalk. After struggling with those first few steps, I was able to move easier and faster. After I made my way out of the waterfront area, the woman's scream began to wind down. As she wound down, I found out that I was able to sprint again. As I took those first two steps, I heard her begin to scream with the same intensity as before. Instead of paralyzing me as I did before, I was able to continue unabated. Frankly, I have no idea if she allowed me or not. At the time, I did not care. All I know is that I could still hear the scream and its echo just as loudly as before. Eventually, I burst through the screen door on the cabin. I reached to my right and grabbed the massive oak door and slammed it shut. I locked it and grabbed one of the nearby couches and pushed it up to the door. I did not realize at the time, but two of my friends were sitting on the couch, one of which alone probably weighed near 300 pounds. Adrenaline really is the greatest thing. After building my makeshift barricade, I see the rest of the cabin had wandered into the lounge. Our program director saw how terrified I was and quickly pulled me into his room and asked me what had happened. Yet for some reason I could not tell him. Not because I didn't want to, but because instead, I physically could not produce the words needed to explain what had happened. I could not sleep that night, and I did not let anyone leave the cabin either. After the camp's morning flag ceremony, our camp director asked me to come into his office. After arriving, he explained to us that he had just received a call from our parents at the hospital that our grandfather had died the night before. I was shocked, not only that I had lost a relative that I have always been close with, but gears had started to turn in my head. I asked our camp director if he knew what time my grandfather had died. He told me he did not know. He then followed up and told me that if I wanted to take a day or two off, he would understand. I waived his offer and left to return to my department. As I walked out of the office, I sent my dad a text asking what time my grandfather died. A short time later, I felt my phone vibrate. I opened up the text I just received. It was my dad's response to my previous text. It read, 1121, why? I am almost certain that I saw a banshee. Banshees, for those who do not know, are a spirit from ancient Irish mythology. It is usually a sign of bad things to come or a death or something like that. My questions are, the banshee is an Irish spirit. Why was it in rural Wisconsin? I had asked all my family members if they saw something like that. None of them ever admitted to seeing something like that. Assuming they are telling the truth, and I have no reason to assume they are not, why am I the only one that has seen it? How did none of the other staff members in my cabin hear her scream? And why did it stop when I entered the cabin? Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true camping horror stories. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a creepy camping experience or something else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd absolutely love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. These were definitely some of the best camping stories I've shared so far. I really hope you like them. I'd love to know which one was your favorite in the comments down below. I'd probably say that last one was my favorite. What a wild ride. But also, witnessing your brother get shot while camping is a pretty wild ride as well. If you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to hit that like button, as it helps me out a ton in the YouTube algorithm. If you're listening on iTunes or another platform, please give me a 5-star rating, as that truly helps the show grow. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us and help the swamp expand its waters? Be sure to subscribe and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day on all things natural and supernatural. If you're on the go and still want to listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories everywhere you go, you can download them absolutely free from iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about everywhere else you find your favorite podcast online. And like I said, it's absolutely free, and always will be. If you'd like to support the Swamp outside of hitting that like button and subscribing, maybe check out the merch store. I have everything from face masks, t-shirts, hoodies, and more. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. Also, thank you to today's sponsor, IP Vanish. I hope you guys check them out. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.